capturing the world. World.
Perfect.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is David Carmichael II with the Capturing the World podcast, and I am back with another episode. I have my friend back again, Philip J. Hall Chan. This is episode 2 of the 3-part series we're doing with him. And just to get it started, man, Philip, how you doing today, man? You been doing okay?
You know, I'm doing great. You know, I just witnessed UConn win back-to-back in the national championship. So, you know, happy.
Yes,
a little bit sad, you know, I saw the list, like UCLA, Duke, Kentucky. I'm like, man, where Kansas at? You know, we should be on there as well for the back-to-back. So I'm even more determined to help KU once I get into the NBA as an NBA team owner, right? Come back with resources to help them get a three-peat, you know, so that not only can we be on that list, but we can, you know, demonstrate excellence in this field as well, right?
For sure, man. I want to ask you too. So it was a lot of good games in that tournament.
Yeah.
The women's as well. So where did they finish in the tournament? I forgot. Like, did they make it to the Sweet 16? How far did they get?
KU lost to Gonzaga.
That's right. Okay.
In the second round before the Sweet 16, actually.
Gotcha.
Round 32, yeah. And that's good, you know, I respect Mark Few a lot, you know, so no harm in losing to Gonzaga, you know.
Yeah, man, Gonzaga has always been one of those good programs that, you know, they're always in the mix every year.
Right.
For
us, we our bench, you know, just wasn't as in depth because we had some players as well. So it's just one of those things that happened.
How many of y'all players are coming back?
Well, you know, sometimes it's it's up in the air. But Duan Harris, you know, he's like a senior now, so hopefully Kevin McCullard and Hunter Dickinson, but they might get cleared for the draft, you know, so that's usually the nature of things. You know, we should probably at least have, I would say, 2 or 3 of the main people coming back, ideally. Right. If not, we'll probably look for some new recruits, so.
Okay, no doubt, man. Yeah, as you know, as we talked on the last episode, you know, I'm a UNC Tar Heel fan, and they did not do what they were supposed to do. I was hoping it was going to be a rematch between them in Arizona, because, you know, Caleb Love was on the Tar Heels and he plays for Arizona.
Oh, okay.
But we both lost before we got a chance to play each other. So, you know, it's all good. It was.
I know y'all beat Alabama, right? So who did you guys lose to?
We lost to that's a good question. But it's been about.
Was it Alabama that took you guys out, actually?
I think it was Alabama that took us out.
Oh, yeah, it was an upset, wasn't it?
It was. I can check it in like 2 seconds. Let me see.
Yeah.
Make sure. I think it was Alabama. Yeah, Alabama. We lost to Alabama by 2. That was the Sweet 16, so we didn't even make it to the Elite Eight Final Four. But yeah, man, you know, UConn took it all, and, you know, some good basketball, man.
Well, to be honest, did you watch the game or did you just see the highlights?
I saw the highlights. I didn't watch the championship game.
So I was not a particular fan of Purdue leaning in on Zach Edey so much. Like, you cannot win a game off a player, man. Like, I mean, it was like it became so predictable. I mean, it was a tight first half, and then, you know, they just did the same old thing. Purdue just kept throwing it inside, and I'm like, why not move the ball? Like, give it to Zach Edey and then throw it up to the three. I remember distinctively there was like players wide open on the 3-point line. And, you know, he didn't, like, catch it, right? Maybe you fake a shot, throw it back out, and just keep the ball moving first. I mean, if you just go to catch it and just do a move, like, literally every single time they started double-teaming, triple-teaming, and making it harder for him. He missed some easy layups. And they also kept him in the game for, like, the whole time. Like, he only got, like, 30 seconds of rest, roughly, you know? So then he started getting tired, and it was evident, you know, that effort was starting to be more lackluster. So I'm not a fan of winning – a championship game, a basketball game, let alone a championship game, you know, with like one person.
Yeah, like that's why, you know, UConn won, because they don't really have a standout player from the way I've been watching it. You know what I mean? They're more of a team over team. You know, they play as a team. It's not a one person team. And, you know, I think that's why they went all the way. So for sure.
And it's hard to win with one player in the college level. Like in the NBA, you could maybe do that because they're so dominant and there's just like freaks in the NBA, right? And basically, but like in college, you know, if you got a great team, man, that's hard to beat because everyone's dialed in. They're not, you know, You sacrificed a good shot for the great shot, and you shed individual glory for team victory, right? And that's if you really execute well, that's where you thrive, right? And not just survive. And I think UConn does a great job of that.
For sure, man. I definitely agree, man. So I know on the last episode we talked about, your upbringing and then what led you to come to America, and then we talked about you being wanting to be a surgeon, right? Was that correct?
Yeah, initially, I mean,
Initially, right.
initially, so I was supposed to take over my dad's accounting firm. I've always been one to forge my own path, by the way, David. So, like, coming from Hong Kong, the city of international commerce, I'm a city boy that loves the suburbs, right? Growing up in Kansas, and one of the things that really stuck out to me was I didn't really see myself, number one, waking up in the city, and two, waking up and doing people's taxes. So when my dad was like, "Okay, kiddo, what do you want to do?" I was like, "I have no clue, but let me explore the medical field." And at that time, being a surgeon really appealed to me because of the hands-on aspects. As I've been an athlete my whole life. And I mean, I thought that that was the career path that would suit me the best. But long term, after being immersed in it, I had realized that it would not be fulfilling, and I knew I had to pivot out for that reason.
Yeah, for sure, man. So like on this episode, we're gonna get more into what you do now, what you have a passion in doing. And so we're gonna focus on, to kind of give a summarization, the high level overview of Lightspeed Investing as a company, right?
Yeah, man.
So I'm very excited. I feel like the our audience are gonna get a lot of good information out of this episode. So let's just go ahead and get into it. So like I said before, we're going to get into the high level overview of Lightspeed Investing as a company. All right, so I guess my first question is, what are your different divisions of your firm, if you don't mind
Yeah.
speaking on that?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I'm super excited to talk about it too, because, with business, right? Like, whatever goals and dreams that you have, that's why I got out. As I want to personally be an NBA team owner, being Jayhawk Ray. So, this is just an amazing opportunity and environment to be immersed in to essentially leverage business as a vehicle to make my dreams into a reality, right? So at Lightspeed Investing, we have several divisions. For the past 15 years, we've been able to manage money for high net worth individuals successfully. So that is our assets under management division, right? We manage about 30 to 35 million just with that. But more importantly, what makes us different than other hedge fund managers is that we're more passionate about spreading the word, right? Because a lot of fellow hedge fund managers, they want to really bring that number up. They really want to, get more assets, bring more investors in, and have more assets under management and grow the firm accordingly. According to the size of their fund. But for us, we're passionate about spreading this information so that more people can be aware of this game. This is very lucrative game, so that they have an option outside of what is traditionally broadcasted within colleges and within traditional college career fairs, right? And so because we were able to manage money successfully for high net worth individuals the past 15 years, about 12 years ago, a lot of our clients, they started asking us, "Hey, this is great, but let's be honest. What if something happened to you, right? What if something were to happen where you're no longer around, and all of a sudden the returns that we're enjoying would just up and vanish, right?" And so, upon client request, that's where we created a proprietary trading education platform where we actually teach others and show them live, right, how we make money, and we actually demonstrate that skill set in front of them. We have an money management, assets under management division. We also have an education division. And last but not least, we also have an automated software, right, for existing clients where the software is meant to help you with your trades.
Okay. So, if somebody wanted to, I guess, join what you're doing right now, how would they, get into that? Or
Yeah, absolutely.
what would you, I guess, suggest for them to like get started, like, put a foot in the water? What would you suggest to
Yeah,
that
right.
person?
Well, so, typically speaking, we have paid client sessions on a weekly basis where in the evenings we teach, right? And then in the mornings we actually go live, we prove what we teach, and we make the money in front of you, and we showcase how that is done. So, like I said, these are typically paid client sessions, but for anyone interested in learning more or having an open mind to expose themselves to this knowledge, feel free to message me on LinkedIn or, reference the link on this Calendly, and by booking the call, you guys can get a complimentary access, a 2-week access to these typically paid client sessions, and just be a guest of ours, right? At zero obligation. Just let us know that you came through this podcast, and we'll be happy to let you sit in, so you can learn more, about being immersed in this type of environment.
Okay, so yeah, so all of my listeners, man, if you want to get involved with Philip J. Hawk Chan, feel free to go to the links he just told us, and yeah, so I know another thing we talked about, or we talked about off the record, was the sources of methodology with John Arnold and James Simmons. Do you mind shedding a little bit light on
Yeah,
that
man, these are
perspective?
the two giants in our field and part of our X factor, of the firm that makes us unique and different. Obviously you heard a little bit when we talked about how we actually go live and we prove what we teach, but more importantly, right, like when I ran into my current business partner now, it was totally life-changing because I got exposed to information that I otherwise would not have gotten. See, according to traditional culture and conventional wisdom, right, being a doctor, lawyer, engineer is the best way to have your life set, right? But see, what you if you didn't study medicine, right? If you and you took that same intensity and effort, right, to study the wealthy, and you study successful people, and then you studied Forbes, you would find that the top 42% of the world's richest play the game that I'm about to describe as we speak. So John Arnold and James Simmons, they are the two giants in our field that we emulate our methodology off of, right? John Arnold, after graduating from Vanderbilt, was able to take 1.5 million to 1.5 billion in 2.5 years, all because he traded the commodity natural gas the right way, right? While Mr. James Simmons, even though he's currently in his late 80s, he's amassed a net worth of $30.1 billion, right? Now, the amazing thing is it did not take him his entire lifetime to amass that kind of wealth, right? He entered this game, around his late 60s, early 70s. And so within a span of about 15 years, he was able to amass this kind of wealth because of the fact that he was a pioneer in our field that actually figured out automated software trading with futures and commodities, so to speak, within this industry. And so the fact that, these two billionaires have accomplished these feats, right, at such astonishing rate, that kind of gives clues as to, okay, well, why is this asset class worthy of paying attention to, right? And so if you do a deeper dive into it, it's about the risk and volatility involved, right? So most people are very scared and apprehensive about the risk and volatility of the markets, but these two giants have figured out a way to actually leverage it where the risk and volatility is now an advantage, right? If you know how to do it correctly. So for our firm, about 70% of our methodology is actually based off of Arnold, while the other 30% comes from the fact that we do represent a group of medical professionals who are now investment professionals, David. So we've added additional prudence, professionalism, and ethics on top of Arnold's methodologies, right? And so essentially what we're doing is we're identifying 5 to 7 factors, and only when these factors are in confluence or in unison do we ever enter in a trade. So while most people are apprehensive and scared about the volatility and of these markets, right, they're also making uneducated decisions. And so essentially when you're making uneducated decisions, it is no longer trading. It now becomes gambling, right? And we do not ever gamble. So, to answer your question, the source of our methodology comes from John Arnold and James Simmons, right? John Arnold took 1.5 million to 1.5 billion, while James Simmons, is someone in his late 80s who's amassed $30.1 billion in about 15 years. But more importantly, we have, fused, their system by crafting out our own, from additional, insights that we have garnered as medical professionals as well.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And I like to mention about, you said James Simmons, that's the one that he was in his 80s when he amassed that big fortune, right? In about
Yeah, in
15
about
year
15 years,
period.
yeah, 15-year period, yeah.
Right. So, he was still in what, in his 60s and, during that time period. So I'm saying all that to say, I guess whatever age you are at, it's never too late to, make it big. And I don't, or just, become whatever your fortune was at that time, you can always make it bigger than what it was, and it's never too late.
Well,
So,
I mean, KFC, right? Mr. Colonel. I don't think he really blew up until like what, 48 or something like that. 48 or 58, whatever.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, I always think about that.
I think J.K. Rowling was the same, but I think she was in, was it she in her 40s? Maybe 40s or 50s when the Harry Potter books became real popular. And that was even before the movies came out. So so I guess I can say all that to say, like, to our audience, whatever age you're at, man, it's never too late to, get into something that can change your life. You know what I mean? So those are two very awesome stories. And I know you're very proud to, build your company around those two people and their tactics. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
and it's a
So.
spectrum, right? Because John Arnold became one of the youngest billionaires in the US at age 33, right, back in 07. And then you have James Simmons, who's in his late 80s, and took about 15 years for him to amass $30.1 billion, right? So it's just cool to kind of see that contrast as well.
Definitely is, man. Sounds good, man. So, all right, so let's talk about, I guess my question is, what exactly is the future in commodity, financial markets, and how does it compare to other asset classes, if you don't mind, talking
Right.
about that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So first and foremost, what you have to recognize is there's two sides of the coin, right? So like when we talk about stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate, and even colleges, right? Very like well-known and popular asset classes, we're talking about traditional investing, right? Traditional investments. Okay. So for futures and commodity financial markets, where we reside is specifically under alternative investments, specifically under derivatives. Right, in the same neighborhood as stock options, cryptocurrencies, foreign currencies like foreign exchange, Forex, as well as art and luxury timepieces. Okay, so that's where we reside. Now, why is it that these two giants of our field was able to amass that kind of wealth? Well, it's because of the volatility inherent, and the risk inherent in these asset classes. So when you look at stocks, bonds, mutual funds are more stable usually, right? They're a bit more conservative. And on our side, the reason why we can it's such a lucrative game and we can garner such, the profits that we garner is because it's inherently more risky and more volatile. But remember, we're operating off of a proprietary system, right, that allows us to leverage these risks and volatility to our side. So, first and foremost, you have to understand that, there's that difference. And when it comes to anything investing, right, you want to look at three segments. You always want to look at what is the barrier to entry, what is the runway, which is time it takes for you to either break even or become profitable. And then you want to look at the ROI, right? So, on the traditional side of things, let's talk about something that everyone knows about, which is real estate, right? So, typically speaking, and I'm just talking about the average cases, it's about 20% down payment for real estate, right? We're talking about 25K, 50K, 100K. The runway is, 3 to 5 years to break even, or become profitable. And then the ROI, you're looking at 8 to 12% returns on an annualized basis, 15 if you're lucky, right? Now, if we look at the futures and commodity financial markets, first and foremost, I just want you to recognize, David, right? We're teaching a active skill set with a short-term investing approach, okay? So in this case, real estate, you're putting money into a property, you got to get it set up, but you're expecting cash flow, right, to your bank account. So it's more passive, right? When I say this is an active skill set, you got to show up, okay? But the thing is if you are willing to learn the skill set, right, you can grow and scale it for the rest of your life and you can garner even more profits. So, how it works is just within this asset class, to trade one contract of the Dow US 30 index, right? It's only $500 with the brokerage that we use. So the barrier entry is 500. So it's a lot more lowered, right, than 25K, 50K, or 100K. The runway, right, we're talking about half an hour to an hour and a half a day, okay? And then in terms of the ROI, it's pretty much the same as real estate, a minimum of 5 to 10% returns. But in this case, though, it's not annualized, it's per day, right? And again, this is based on an active skill set. So the more willing you're committed, to developing the skill set, then the more those percentages will go up.
Okay, sounds good, man. So I guess my question is, how can, I know you were saying like the real estate part, you invest into a home, whatever, or a building, whatever type of real estate it is, it's more passive, passive income. You pretty much can just let it accumulate on its own without you really having to do a whole lot. But as far as the investing with your company, that's a skill and you have to be dedicated to it. But how can somebody stay motivated to show up? You say you got to show up and want to learn the skills and
So
do,
what I
you know what I'm
mean by
saying?
showing up is you got to be, trading, in front of your computer for half an hour to an hour and a half. So that's what I mean. Like, it's an active skill set where you're essentially analyzing these markets, for a setup that you understand. And only when, like I said, those five to seven proprietary factors that we teach are in confluence and in unison, do you ever enter in a trade, right? So you always want to focus on inputs because inputs always dictate outputs. Like, the amount of money that you make is irrelevant. What's more important is how quality are your trades, right? You're looking to, at least on 10 of them, be right on eight of them, right? 8 out of 10, for example. And if you are right on at least 8 out of 10 with that kind of accuracy, you will definitely be profitable no matter what markets you trade. You see what I'm saying? So,
Right.
showing up, making sure that you are following the system, following the guidelines so that you're trading like a professional. You're not just winging it and gambling, right? You're not just guessing and hoping. Hope is not part of the formula, right?
Right.
Hoping that things will go your way, right? So that's kind of like what I mean by showing up actively is being in front of the computer screen for half an hour to an hour and a half a day, maybe sometimes even maybe 2 hours, and get the job done, right? But the thing that makes us different is we are not day traders. We're not spending 5 to 8 hours in front of the screens. We're looking to be surgically precise, and that's why we want to be done, between the time span of half an hour to an hour and a half, so that we can extract profits from the market. Well, extract points from these markets, and these points will then translate to profits, right? Accordingly. And you can utilize this skill set in whatever way you want to that fits your lifestyle. It can be a way of generating supplemental income. You can maybe, as you see yourself getting better, use it to cover half of your salary, right? Or, if you get really, really good at it and you see the trajectory, you're like, I'm going to literally leverage this skill set and make it my full-time income, right? So it's
Right.
what you're willing to do with it and what makes the most sense for you as well.
Okay. Awesome, man. Awesome. So, yeah, that was a lot of good information on this episode. This is all the time we have right now. But my last question is, obtaining a high income skill set through trading futures and commodities. But we're going to save that for our last and third episode of our series. Philip J. Hawk Chan, man, I appreciate you being a part of this episode two of our three-part series. And just leave your information for our listeners real quick, where they can find you. I know we already talked about it earlier, but feel free to say that one more time before we get out of
Yeah,
here.
absolutely, man. So, if you guys listen to this podcast and you resonate with what I'm sharing, just feel free to message me on LinkedIn at Philip J. Hawk Chan. There should also be a link from my Calendly. Remember, we typically host paid client sessions on a weekly basis where we teach in the evenings and we actually go live and we prove what we teach. So if you want to secure, the best 2 weeks that works for you, make sure you book that call. We can identify the best 2 weeks according to your schedule. We'd love to get to know you a bit more as well. And, feel free to be a guest of our universe at zero obligation so that you can get educated and be exposed to a style of investing that can potentially change your life.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate you, Mr. Philip J. Hawk Chan. This is David Carmichael II with the Caption of World Podcast. And we'll catch you on episode three of our three-part series. Not episode three, but part three of our three-part series. And on that note, thank y'all to all of my Spotify and Apple Podcast listeners. Until next time, y'all have a good one. Peace.